On our altar today, in many ways, we have examples of the progression of spiritual life in so many different dimensions. Of course, we have that picture, the large frame picture of Jesus, is a painting done by an artist based on the impression left on the Shroud of Turin. The Shroud of Turin is this ancient piece of cloth that many people believe was the winding sheet around Jesus, and there's a reverse image on there that is reputed to be the features of Jesus that were imprinted on the cloth when the power of the resurrection went through him. It's been scientifically tested and debated, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, that's not the point of it. The resurrection is not proven or disproven by the Shroud of Turin. This artist painted that face based on that picture, and in many ways it has the power of a man who could live the life that Jesus lived. So many pictures of Jesus depict the sweet shepherd of the flock with the little lamb around his neck, blessed Jesus, meek and mild. And that sweetness, of course, has to also be part of it. But this was a powerful man. This was a man who took on the force of a ruling class that had the power to put him to death and ultimately did put him to death and didn't flinch in the face of any kind of human suffering, even crucifixion itself. Much is made of how much Jesus suffered, but not enough is made of the fact that Jesus utterly transcended all human limitation. When Swamiji saw this image of Jesus, which is why when it came to us a few years ago, we replaced the picture on our main altar. Swami looked at him and he said, "Now there's a man I could follow who has the power of a master in his eyes." Well, because it's the Christmas season, right next to Jesus, we've put Bambino Gesù. He's a Catholic Jesus, you should know. He came from Rome. He was purchased by David and Asha on a trip to Rome on a street quite near the Vatican. Prior to this, we used a midwife's model of a newborn baby. Anatomically correct and extremely lifelike, so much that people got a little nervous when they saw us carrying him. Someone said, "Did they have a baby?" Just like, this was many years ago when it might have been possible, but it was still pretty outside the realm. But the karma of that child didn't exactly seem Christ-like to us. So we figured that somewhere somebody had solved this problem. So when we went to Rome, we discovered indeed shop after shop with pictures and with all different Jesuses of all different sizes. And he had quite a few identical twins. But we spent a long time in the shop until we found him. And he seemed somehow just right. And he has a very interesting life because he lives in a box in our closet. I never let him out of our sight for many months of the year, and he seems quite content. But as soon as he comes out, it's impossible to put him back in the box. I had to transport him with the lid on the box the other day, just out for safety. And I felt very nervous, just like a mother, afraid he was going to smother in there until I could get him out into the open again. Now, you know, it's easy, especially as intellectual as we all are, to make light of something so simple, isn't it so? But what does it serve us? I mean, how does it serve us to be cynical about the sweet things? Yeah, somebody commented, and this comment comes every year, because when Christmas comes, I try to devote all of December to it, and a great deal is making costumes, making angel costumes for children and shepherd costumes for little boys, and I'm always showing people, "Oh, look at this little halo with the flower in it." And people are nice. Courteous, you might say. But I think, why aren't they as enthusiastic about it as I am? I'm not speaking of myself, but I say, why not be that enthusiastic? What happens to us along the way where when we're holding a little baby Jesus, somehow we think about it just being a painted doll. But it's a painted doll if we think of it as a painted doll. And it's a perfect symbol of the baby Jesus if we open our hearts to that reality. Many years ago, when David and I still lived at Ananda Village, I used to travel to Oregon and Washington, and sometimes David would go with me, but sometimes not. And one of the very first trips I had to take after we were married, and so it was not easy to be apart for that long period of time after we hadn't put more time into the bank of our life together. And I traveled with Agni, a good friend of mine, who was a very good singer and played the guitar, and the two of us took this long trip together, and has a spirit similar to mine. Somehow, in the process, we acquired a pink duck, stuffed duck. And the duck became the symbol of my absent husband. Not that, it was no relationship between David and the duck, but the duck became the symbol. And all through the trip, both of us, without the slightest inhibition, related to that duck as if it were David. We put it in the front seat with us. You know, sometimes we'd take it into the restaurants. You know, we just live with it. Then I came home, and David quite recently, just took the duck and sort of tossed it into the corner. I was just horrified. Then I had to realize I was in the presence of the real David. I didn't have to protect the duck anymore. But the duck had become... Not that, I mean, it was still just made out of the same material as my sweater, but because of the vibrations that we had given it, you know, it really was a friend. Now, the whole process of spiritual life is a very interesting one. Master said visualization and imagination are very important qualities to have on the spiritual path. Now, we have to understand them in the right way. Because sometimes people try to comfort themselves with imaginary ideas, which is just pretending this world is a better place than it is. And of course, the furthest extension of that is madness, when people just can't handle what life is really giving them. They retreat into an imaginary world where things can't touch them anymore. I remember when we had our center upstairs in a building over on California Avenue, and one day a homeless man found his way all the way upstairs, and we were very obscure up there, and he was there, and I needed to invite him to leave because nothing that we had to offer him was really going to help him. In fact, in an odd way, you see people who are too much into an imaginary world sometimes like our place, because they can feel that for us too, the walls are down a little bit. But for them, they need to become grounded in this world, and transcending it sideways is not the same as actually integrating and raising your consciousness. So I had to encourage him to leave. And he had all these papers and this clipboard, and he was saying to me that he would leave in just a minute, but first he had some important work to do. And he was scribbling like this. And I thought, this man, and he looked like a man who, of substance, really. And I thought, wow, some point in your life, you probably did have important work to do. But whatever it was that cracked your spirit, you know, now it's just a fragment of a memory for you. And slowly, I was able to move him downstairs and help him as the best I could and send him on his way. My prayer, whenever I'm surrounded by people that I don't feel that I can really affect their consciousness directly, I can't give them what they need, except to pray to Divine Mother. Divine Mother, bless us all. I came to that when surrounded by beggars in Calcutta. I didn't have enough rupees to give them, and frankly, I didn't like their attitude anyway, and I didn't want to give them any rupees. But they were clearly people in need. And I just looked at them and I said to myself, not to them, Divine Mother, bless us all. Bless me that I can have compassion, bless them that whatever complicated life they're trying to work it out, they can work it out. Divine Mother, bless us all. I just repeated it and repeated it inside my heart and looked at people very calmly. They all just calmed down and let me walk away, which was the most important thing at that point, just to extricate myself from them. So on the spiritual path, we have to use the powers of visualization and imagination. And in fact, you don't even come to the path of self-realization unless you have a certain creativity, because you have to be able to look at this world self-evidently what it is and realize that it's not at all what it is. That everything that's happening here is a certain vibration of energy, and when we change our vibrations and change our consciousness, our entire perception of this reality is different. This is what Swamiji is trying to tell us in our reading today. When he tells that story, it was told briefly today, he tells it longer. He was sitting there when he was a new disciple. He came to Master when he was 22. And Master lived only 3.5 more years. So Swamiji was a young man trying to understand. And he said it was so confusing to him because he was utterly convinced that Master Paramahansa Yogananda had a consciousness that was infinite, that he was able to perceive every level of reality and be a channel for that power directly to Swamiji. But he was also a man walking around, having conversations, sitting down to a meal, cooking, laughing, writing letters. And Swamiji just said his mind would just, he just couldn't put it together. In fact, he said to us on more than one occasion that even though we think it would be a blessing to be in the presence of the living master, in many ways it's less confusing never to have experienced that human incarnation, because then we can hold merely to the spiritual side. But he said Master just looked at him with so much sympathy. Implied was, you poor lad, you're never going to be able to think your way to this. And said, if you only knew my consciousness. And on another occasion, Swamiji said, when he was struggling with the same question, Master walked over and handed him an apple. Just sort of another kind of sympathetic gesture here. Just relax, you're not going to be able to capture all of this. Now, the point is, we do have to find a way, though, to capture all of this. Because unless we expand our sense of the possible, we're actually never going to progress. The reward, as they say, for defending our present delusions is that we get to keep them. And is really that such a prize? Ask yourself, when next time you find yourself, this is what I believe, this is what's true, this is who I am. We're always saying that, aren't we? Well, this is what I'm like. Really? And how proud are you of that? How committed are you to that? How many times do you want to affirm it? This is what I'm like. I'm the kind of person who does this, likes that, can't do it this. Why? Why? There's a line in this beautiful song that they were just singing. All creatures here on earth. And then the line is, alive to their own worth. Now, isn't that so beautiful, the way Swamiji weaves together this, all it's about this tiny baby here. And the quality of consciousness that the tiny baby is emanating. Because the baby's body is this big. But the infinite consciousness is manifest through that body as much as it ever was or ever will be. It's just the form that's small. And the language isn't there yet. And the ability to walk around and drive money changers out of the temple hasn't fully manifested. But all that potential is contained there. And for those who have the consciousness to feel it, there it is. And what is it that the baby Jesus gives us? He wakens within us our own worth. And believe me, our worth is not our stock portfolios or the big promotion or the extremely clever work that we're able to do. God enjoys doing all that through us. You know, Steve Jobs was highly influenced by Yogananda. Because he had a real work to do to help bring this world into Dwapara Yuga, to innovate our dissolving of time and space and distance and communication and so on. It's not that God doesn't enjoy all these things that we do, but it's not that that makes him beloved, makes us beloved by him. Nor is it all of that that awakens within us our own worth. In our movie, Finding Happiness, the story about Ananda, the cynical reporter who comes to investigate this community, which is the way the movie mixes facts and fact and fiction, fictional character doing a story about a real place, and then the real place presents itself. The movie's called Finding Happiness. In one of her inner monologues about happiness, as she starts asking herself, what makes me happy? She said, well, I'm happy when I do good work, she says, which means I'm happy only a small part of the time. And the rest of the time I feel anxious. That's how she put it. Ooh, does that ever strike deep, doesn't it? These little minutes when I'm finally doing what I can consider to be worthwhile, then finally I'm free. And the rest of the time there's this all-pervasive sense of nervousness. But what does the Christ child bring? The Christ child brings this awareness that just raises the vibration up to the point where we don't ask that question anymore. We just wake up to our oneness with this power of spirit, and we watch the little story that's going on down there. Oh yeah, there she is, playing the fool again. This is the part in which the heroine does something really dumb, right? And we watch it play. I love the movie caption way of going through your own life. You know, this is the part where she makes a real mistake. Oh, look, here is the villain getting ready to capitalize on her terrible error. You know, and it just has to play itself out. But every so often we wake up to a wholly different reality. You know, that's why the power... And I'm going to pick up little baby Jesus again. He's fine over here, but I'm not. We pick up little baby Jesus again, and why is it that we like babies so much? Because they just look at us with love. They don't know, do they? They really don't know that we didn't get that promotion, and they really don't know all the ways in which we're disappointed in our life. They really don't know all the judgmental thoughts that we had yesterday, how we lost our patience. They just sort of look up at us and just expect. And you see, that's the real relationship that we have to have with God. Last week I quoted, and I'll say it again, Anandamayi Ma, when they asked her if it was all right to call her mother. She said, well, there's a little too much distance if you call me mother. She said, I want to be the child that lives in your heart. So we pick up this little doll. And I'm not so dumb that I don't remember that he's an inanimate object, but I choose to forget. Because by using imagination, what we're imagining is more real than what we call real. Years ago, I had to travel, and I think maybe it was that same trip with Agni. And I was showing a slideshow of Ananda. Beautiful pictures, just gorgeous pictures. And then we traveled for 6 weeks, and every time I showed that slideshow, people would say to me, well, I'm sure it works there up in the woods, but how do you get along when you have to go into the real world, they'd say. I answered that question over and over and over, and maybe by the sixth week I was a little tired. Maybe that was the reason. But I said, what makes the world of competition and unkindness and disrespect and lack of sweetness and atheism more real than a place where we are striving with every ounce of our being to attune ourselves to an everlasting reality? And what makes a world in which you can distract yourself from your own lack of self-worth by a thousand means? Oh, I'll just have a couple of beers before I go to bed at night, you know, and then I won't have to slip through that uncomfortable subconscious zone. I'll just pass out. I don't know what to do with myself. I'll turn on the television. I'm so upset about work today, 7 donuts. You know, just all the ways in which whenever we move into reality, we run away from it. You know, the biggest obstacle on the spiritual path is our own willingness to allow the light to shine upon us. So we practice where it's easier. You pick up the little baby Jesus and you know that he cares about you. P.G. Woodhouse wrote a story. It was called The Shy Man. And it was written from the point of view of the man's dog. And the dog wrote this story about his owner had this real problem because he was always hiding from people. And so the dog decided that it was his job to try to give this man more confidence. Now, of course, it turned out that the man was a thief, and the people he was usually hiding from were the police. But, of course, the dog didn't know that. You know, I'm going to put baby Jesus down because he's a hardy lad, and he's rather heavy, actually. But that's how God sees us a little bit. He knows our worth, and he wants to wake us up to it. And the biggest obstacle to that is our unwillingness to let him in. Because I'm the kind of person who, you know, I don't really enjoy Christmas, and I think the baby Jesus is just a little silly, and those halos really aren't so attractive, and that pink duck isn't really your husband, it's just a pink duck. You know, Americans especially. What does it serve us? Just ask yourself that question, who do I really want to be? And when I leave this whole world behind, which we will all do that, just like this. You know, just someday. Every so often something happens here and it's so touching or so fun to me. I say, well, at my memorial service, I want you to do that. Tanva wears these yellow tennis shoes. He has them on today. There they are. When you see them, you always laugh. I say, at my memorial service, please wear those yellow tennis shoes because that will definitely lighten the mood, you know? Or certain songs that are sung. And I do that partly just for fun. I'm not writing a will of all the things, although, Tandava, you have to wear the yellow tennis shoes no matter where you are in the world. But I say that also because I like thinking about that. I like thinking about the fact that everything is temporary. Everything is temporary except the consciousness we have. And the consciousness we have, we are building minute by minute by minute by minute. There's no later. There's no future that is disconnected from the present when everything is going to be better. There is just this minute, which is attached to that minute, which is attached to that one, and each one is a continuous flow. So when we find ourselves bound by all these ways of being that do not serve us, let us awaken to our own worth. With the presence of the Christ child can give us more directly and more powerfully perhaps than anything else we have in our society at this time. Alive to our own worth. That's what the baby Jesus came to show us. What joy.